Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 27th, and you're tuned to our State Capitol Report, where we'll get you up to date on all the major happenings from under the State Capitol Dome, and we'll preview the week ahead. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is with us to let us know if there's been any progress on the state budget, which has Wisconsin in the headlines these days because we are the only state in the nation operating without a state budget for this fiscal year. Does that matter to you or not? What about Common Cause saying that it's a joke and that we're a national joke for not having a state budget? What would you keep or cut in the state budget if you were sitting at the negotiation table? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. He'll be joining us for the first half hour of the program. And then after 7:30, we will hear from two state lawmakers who have differing points of view on new legislation that deals with the state's minimum wage and hiking it sooner rather than later and then indexing it so there are automatic increases. We'll talk about that after 7:30. First, Sean Johnson. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
Say, it seems to me that most of the news from state government last week was not about budget stuff, but about all the flooding that we received. The governor was out and about touring the flooded areas and talking about that and not yelling at the Republicans.
Yeah, sometimes these things, you know, sort of put everything into perspective. The governor found it a little bit more important to be touring these areas that have been hit hard by storms in the state. And he sort of banged the drum to get federal officials out here to look at a few counties that were hit the hardest. And yesterday, those counties were declared federal disasters. So people there who don't have flood insurance qualify for about $28,000 to rebuild or repair their homes.
Yeah, well, that's good news, certainly for those people in those five counties. The head of FEMA was in Madison, on Friday? And it's not often you see the head of FEMA, the federal government wants to make sure that it doesn't drop the ball on this one, apparently.
Yeah, they know they have some image problems to work through. And he mentioned several times that we want this to be quick. He said he doesn't want to be just another suit in Washington. So he sort of said everything that he probably needed to at that time. Quick response, we're going to look right away. And he said that from what he had seen, it looked like there would be a disaster declared there just from the damage. And, it was a pretty quick turnaround. The crews were in there Saturday and the disaster declared on Sunday. And now FEMA is going to be looking at several other counties that have been hit hard by storms to see if they can be added to this federal declaration as well.
Well, it looks like we're getting a number of callers who have some suggestions on how to break this budget stalemate at the state capitol.
Great.
We'll go to those in a little bit. But what's the latest, Sean? No progress at all?
Mm-hmm. I think you could really say no progress at this point. Basically what happens is at this conference committee where you have four Democrats and four Republicans sitting down across from each other at a table they're supposed to be negotiating budgets over negotiating differences over the budget. They just sit there and sort of talk past each other, and they hit on the same points over and over again. And it's a lot of talking, not a lot of listening, not a lot of movement.
Yeah, and they're not prodded into movement by Common Cause saying that they're a joke.
No, not at this point. I mean, it's eerily calm at the Capitol. In other states, when there's no budget come July 1st. It's hectic because they have to pay the bills, and without a new budget, they can't do it. In Wisconsin, because the old budget basically rolls over into the new year until you have a new budget, so spending just continues. There's not that pressure yet for lawmakers to act because the bills are still getting paid, albeit at lower levels.
What, in a nutshell, are the obstacles?
I always kind of focus on this $10 billion figure that separates the two sides. Senate Democrats want to spend about $10 billion more than Assembly Republicans in this budget. And then you move to the issues. I mean, Senate Democrats want universal health care. It's a big idea and something you don't see a lot in any level of government. And so that's something that's still on the table that they're still pushing for. On the other end of the spectrum, you have Republicans saying we're going to have a Spartan budget and we're not going to increase any taxes in this budget. So that gives them much less money to work with. And so they have the middle ground is just not in sight at this point, I think.
Yeah. Let's take a weather break and then continue talking about the state budget and other issues making news at the state capitol in the past week and what's going to happen in the week to come as well. Sean Johnson, our guest, he is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. And you can join in with your thoughts and questions. What would you do to break this stalemate? What would you keep or what would you cut that are in the state budget? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday morning, August the 27th, and this is our State Capitol Report, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter, to get the latest on the state budget. Coming up after 7:30, we'll take a look at a bill that's going to get a hearing at the State Capitol this week. It deals with raising the state's minimum wage sooner rather than later. That's after 7:30. Let's go to the phones and take Kyle in Madison. Hi, Kyle. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
One of the things that I think I would hopefully raise would be the education and decrease. And one of the things I'm not sure the facts on this, but I've heard that there's actually more money spent on our prison system than our education system. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, so you would want to hike money to education is what you're saying. Specifically,
yeah.
Higher education?
Higher education. I actually am a professor, of course. I have a stake in that. But one of the things that the budget not being passed really affects the university system is that for our raise and tenure and all that kind of thing, we actually go through a whole process to determine whether or not, you know, people get a raise. And that's a very lengthy and time-consuming process. And then sometimes after the legislature actually gets through with their deliberation, there is no money for a raise. So we waste a lot of time.
Yeah.
So that's very, very frustrating.
Yeah. Thanks.
But,
thanks, Kyle. Sean, what are the differences when it comes to the university budget between the Senate and the Assembly?
There's about $120 million difference between them, and both budgets would increase funding to the university. The difference is that the Assembly's budget would just do it enough to pay, you know, basically the new heating and energy bills and debt service. Whereas the Senate budget would let them basically do the things that they want to do, expand, fund a competitive pay plan, they say. And Kyle was talking about, you know, money set aside for salaries. That's another big difference between these two budgets. The Assembly Republicans have a much smaller pot of money set aside for, you know, raises across the state than do the Senate Democrats. So and that's something that will be up in the air until they work that out.
Yeah. And of course, we've said it before on this program and might as well say it again. The Assembly's version of the state budget, when it comes to the university funding, does eliminate funding for public broadcasting. It's the university's budget where the Assembly Republicans have eliminated public broadcasting state support, and the Senate Democrats did not do that.
Right. The Senate Democrats basically stuck to what the governor had in his plan. The Assembly Republicans took away public broadcasting funding, funding for the UW Law School, and zeroed in on some other departments and gave them specific cuts.
Yeah, and this did come up at the table at one point. Didn't the Democrats come back and say, "All right, we'll cap tuition at 4%, but let's fund this this other higher education stuff"? And didn't the other side just sort of say, "Well, put that on the table"? You know, I mean, it wasn't agreed upon, at least at that point.
Yeah, and that was maybe the one area during these budget talks over the last month where it looked like that might actually be some sort of movement. that because the tuition cap is a big part of what Assembly Republicans want in their university budget. But the problem is, from their perspective, Democrats basically said, okay, we'll give you that, but you have to give us everything else we want with the university budget. And there was no deal at that point.
Yeah. Ruth in Madison is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. As for what I would cut, I guess I would cut the number of days the legislature meets for committees or for full session. And the reason is because the Joint Finance Committee already worked this out. They already came to an agreement with the Assembly and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats, and then it got past the Senate, no problem, and it got into the Assembly, and all of a sudden Mike Hipsch and them decide they don't like it, so they now are reinventing the wheel that's already been invented. And that, to me, and they're doing it not just with the budget, but with so many other things where, excuse me, it's like, like Mike Hipsch seems to think he was elected governor with veto power or something.
Love your birds, Ruth. But the Assembly, did pass a very different version than the Senate, right, Sean?
Yeah, and I think this the contention that, well, I'll say this, that the way that the Joint Finance Committee works when it's split down the middle like this, 8-8, basically areas where they don't agree and where you have deadlocked votes, those go to the governor, and whatever he put in the budget stands. And so you can't quite say that Joint Finance worked all this out because, half the committee was voting against a lot of these proposals that went forward, like the cigarette tax and the hospital tax and the oil tax. Republicans never wanted those. It just wasn't until the budget went to the full assembly that they could really do anything about it. As to whether this committee process is worth it, that I think that's a legitimate question. You look at how long the Joint Finance Committee spent going through this budget when everybody basically knew that it was going to go to a conference committee and leaders were going to have to work it out in the end. Why go through that? That's a legitimate question.
Let's talk a bit about this difference of opinion over the stewardship fund that played out some last week.
Sure. This is one of many areas where the two sides are far apart. The stewardship program is the state's program for buying and setting aside public land, and it has been used extensively over the past couple decades. And this is something where the governor wants to increase the amount of money that the state spends on stewardship purchases when it renews the program for the next 10 years. So it would be through 2010 through 2020. Democratic Senate Majority Leader basically defended the governor's position last week, and she told her colleagues that it'll help the state keep up with the increasing cost of land, and she says it'll also help the state move fast when large tracts of property go on the market.
Yeah, this is Democratic Senate Majority Leader Judy Robson.
If we don't, what will happen to those natural areas and those forests is they become open. They'll be open to development, and then we will have lost them forever.
What, and the Republicans don't buy that?
They still set aside money for stewardship, but I think their argument has been that we already have a lot of government-owned land in Wisconsin. When you have government-owned land, it takes it off the property tax rolls. And so then in places like Vilas County that have a lot of public property, drives up property taxes on people that may not be able to afford it, and so they would still spend money on stewardship, although they would cut it back to level from like the 80s. Basically, is how the rate at which we'd be purchasing land. And another big case that they make for that is that the way that we pay for this is through borrowing. The state would have to borrow over $1 billion over the next decade to keep up with the governor's plan. And Assembly Majority Leader Jeff Fitzgerald compared it to running up credit card debt.
We're out there borrowing more money to purchase more land for the state of Wisconsin and take more land off the tax roll. That's what we're out there doing. We're credit card spending to purchase more land.
And this is another area where you saw like maybe a bit of micro movement, where another thing that Republicans want with the stewardship program is for the legislature to have oversight over these stewardship purchases. Democrats said, well, if that's what you want, that's something we can look at. But that, again, no actual final deal in that area.
So go back to the phones. Jean in Eau Claire is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have three comments. One, that one way to what I would do is to eliminate many of the tax breaks for businesses currently in Wisconsin. Currently, Wisconsin has the third lowest corporate tax in the United States. Also, I would eliminate many, re-examine the all of the exemptions from the sales tax. Although the sales tax is a regressive tax, it is not nearly as regressive as our current property tax, and there are far too many loopholes in that in our sales tax. Third, I think we need to take a long-range view and to really, really reduce our property taxes and to have some kind of social justice in our health care plan. We need to enact Healthy Wisconsin, which will lower property taxes and will actually provide insurance for children, for their mothers. All children would be insured.
Jean, I don't mean to cut you off, Jean, but you've given us more than we can handle in the couple of minutes that we have left here. You want to just comment briefly? There was a tax exemption or tax break that was made news. It was something about gold bullion. What was that, Sean?
Yeah, it was really small, and it's something that Assembly Republicans included in their budget, this tax exemption for people who collect gold bullion or gold coins or platinum, things like that. And they signaled for the first time that they'd be willing to take that out of their package, which it's not too surprising given that they've been hammered on that issue in campaign commercials by the governor. Every time the governor talks about the budget, he says they value people who collect gold bullion more than
Goofy.
Education.
So that's not a business break. Are there anything else that?
Well, you know what Gene was talking about there, that the elimination of tax breaks for businesses. There's a plan that Senate Democrats have that would basically bring the state about $100 million more in taxes than it collects right now by taxing companies that have out-of-state subsidiaries, that have subsidiaries in Las Vegas or Delaware or elsewhere. Democrats view that as you're not paying your fair share, and of course Republicans characterize it as a tax increase.
Yeah, there is no movement to extend the sales tax to other items, is there?
That's something the governor has commented on before the session started, and he said the problem with that is that real people end up paying that. When you would end up paying more sales tax on things that you're not now. And so the governor's not really on board with that. And then Healthy Wisconsin that Gene mentioned, that's, you know, the gemstone of the Senate Democratic budget, and that's another area where the governor hasn't exactly spoken highly of it. He said he lives in the real world and should be looking at his healthcare plans.
Yeah, we have just a couple. That is probably like the biggest obstacle, isn't it, that the Assembly Republicans don't want that Healthy Wisconsin universal healthcare plan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely not the direction they want to go.
Well, we'll leave it there for now, Sean. We didn't get to everything, but we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Joy.
This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Monday morning, August the 27th. And you're tuned to our State Capitol Report. In this half hour, we'll take a look at legislation that would hike Wisconsin's minimum wage sooner rather than later and would index it to inflation. And we will welcome two guests with different perspectives on this legislation during this half hour, and we want to know what you think. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The legislature is considering a move that would automatically raise the minimum wage each year after bumping it up to $7.25 an hour from the current $6.50 an hour. Sponsors say by indexing the minimum wage to inflation, it can protect low-wage workers from long delays in raises in the minimum wage. Our guest first is Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine. He is the Assembly co-author of SB 130, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why do you support this?
Well, it's the fair thing to do. It would mean a raise for about 250,000 people of Wisconsin, about 10% of the workforce, in terms of the raise. But in terms of the indexing, you know, right now, if the minimum wage earners get a raise, it requires an act of the legislature. And this sort of takes the politics out of the equation. You know, the folks are already making low wages at the minimum wage. This at least ensures that their already low wages keep up with inflation.
Yeah. I'm a little confused on what this would do. Wisconsin just had a hike in our state minimum wage that took effect in June.
Right.
Now what do you want to see?
This would increase it to $7.25, and we picked that number because that's the number that the federal government is currently considering for a national minimum wage, so we didn't want to put ourselves behind if we were going to go to indexing. So it raises it up to $7.25 and then indexes it every year thereafter.
And when would it raise to $7.25?
It would go into effect, I believe, this September after it goes immediately upon passing, and then would be indexed every September.
Yeah. Didn't the current hike in the state's minimum wage do the trick for now?
Well, you know, if you're at $6.50, you're still making about $13,000 a year, and that's awfully hard if, you know, you're a single parent or trying to raise a family on $13,000 a year. And even at that raise, there's 19 other states that have minimum wages higher than ours.
Yeah. Presumably, this is going to face opposition. We're going to be hearing from the a guest from a business group in about 5 or 10 minutes or so. Business groups don't like this hiking the minimum wage every other month because they say it's a big cost on business and it costs us jobs because they'll have to have fewer people if they have to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah, they've said that repeatedly whenever the minimum wage gets proposed. And I guess there's a couple of things to look at. Historically, that's been proven not to be true, that it doesn't cost jobs. And, you know, smart economists at places like the Economic Policy Institute have done extensive studies that show it's not true. But in Florida, where they went through this recently, they have indexing, and, you know, business groups predicted that it would cost billions of dollars and thousands of jobs, and it would be a real job killer in Florida, and that just didn't turn out to be true. They, you know, the St. Petersburg Times did some great reporting and went back and asked these small businesses that were worried about losing jobs if they lost any jobs, and they said no, and Florida continues to be a leader in the country in job growth. So, you know, I understand that there's sort of an ideological opposition to the minimum wage or raising the minimum wage, but, you know, workers at the bottom end of the wage scale really need a modest increase so they can at least attempt to try to raise a family at an acceptable wage.
Should Wisconsin raise its minimum wage to $7.25 an hour to match the federal minimum wage hike that's being explored? And should the minimum wage in Wisconsin be indexed and tied to inflation so it's automatically increased and we don't have to have this fight in the legislature every so often? We are talking with Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine, who is the Assembly co-author of SB 130, a bill that would do this in Wisconsin, a bill that's due for a hearing this week, and that's why we're talking about it during our state capitol report. And we will only have Representative Mason with us for the next few minutes. So if you have a reaction for him or a question for him, we welcome your call right now, as we will be switching guests in just a few minutes. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org and include your first name and your community with your email. Talking about whether Wisconsin should hike its minimum wage sooner rather than later and index it so it is raised automatically in the years to come. Is that a good idea or not? And here come the calls. This legislation is going to get some sort of action this week, Representative Mason?
Yeah, there's a hearing in the Senate Labor Committee tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the state capitol.
Yeah, what kind of
you know, what chances do you give this bill?
You know, I'm hopeful that people will see that, you know, it's a fair thing to do and move forward. But, you know, part of the public hearing process is to hear what people think and hopefully reach consensus and move forward.
Yeah, other states do index their minimum wage to the cost of living?
Yeah, several states do. I think it's almost 9 states who now do indexing. So it's not, you know, we wouldn't be alone in this regard.
Yeah. Well, let me try to get some calls in before our weather break time. Forrest in Greendale. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Yes, I do support Representative Bates' position on this. I kind of look at it. Government sets the foundation level for drug safety, for food safety, safety in the industry. We should have a floor or a foundation also for people who go to work every day. So I think it's a good proposal. And in addition, the indexing would finally not have to prevent this from so many years go by between people getting an opportunity to get a raise. So thank you.
Yeah. You want to react to that?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, thanks for the call. I think it's a good point. I mean, one of the roles that government makes is to provide some basic protections to people, and this is certainly one of them. But the other thing about indexing that's worth pointing out is it also gives businesses certainty. I mean, instead of there being, you know, a big jump that may come every, you know, 5-6 years, and then they have to adjust for that, this allows them to know that, you know, we know pretty much every year, just like all our other costs are going to go up roughly with inflation. We can anticipate that our labor costs need to go up roughly by inflation and adjust for that.
Thanks, Forrest, for the call. Alex in Belgium, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I've always wondered if there's ever been discussion about having two different minimum wages, one for somebody who's supporting a family and another for the teenager that's working for pocket change.
In some ways, there are, actually. The minimum wage for summer employment and for agricultural employment and wait staff actually is different if you're a minor or opportunity employees or if you're a tipped employees. They actually, agricultural employees, they all have lower minimum wages than the standard minimum wage that currently already exists. And this bill does, by the way, offer adjustments upward for all those categories.
Yeah. Let me get you to react to Ed Lump from the Restaurant Association. We are very much opposed to the idea of automatic adjustments each year because it locks in an increase that goes into effect regardless of what you've got going on in the economy. So what's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, I mean, the hard part about that position is those people that are getting paid those wages also live in that economy. And, you know, they need to be able to keep up with the rate of inflation like everyone else does. So, you know, saying that, you know, paying tipped employees in the Restaurant Association from $2.13 to $2.33 an hour, I don't think that's an unreasonable ask.
Yeah. Tom in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling to just make a couple points. The first one is I don't agree with this bill, and I'll give you an example why. It does actually cause us to lose jobs. And over a period of time, our jobs, more and more of our jobs end up in Mexico and China, and that's because it's harder for us to compete in Wisconsin. So that's the first point. The other one is I think it's embarrassing when the government has to tell an individual what they're worth, what their wages are worth. I think that I used to work for minimum wage, and then I went to technical school and got a one-year degree, and I make 3 times the minimum wage. And I think that's what gives people incentive to go out and work hard and get ahead, rather than pay people for what the government says they're worth.
Corey Mason?
Well, I think education's a great opportunity for those who get it, and I applaud you for getting your technical degree. And, you know, it says a lot about technical education and how valuable that is. And for those people who get a technical degree, it's certainly better than making the minimum wage. But for those wage earners that are left right now, about 255,000 people in Wisconsin, they're still making that minimum wage and trying to raise a family. And hopefully we do a better job of getting people better educated and getting those technical college degrees so that they can support a family. But in the meanwhile, they're still wage earners and they're still trying to make ends meet and raise a family.
Representative Mason, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine, the Assembly co-author of SB 130. We'll get a different viewpoint on this bill that would hike Wisconsin's minimum wage to $7.25 and index it so it raises automatically in the years to come. And we welcome your questions for our next guest, Bill Smith, Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, after this weather break. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Monday, August the 27th. We're talking about a bill that's in the state legislature that would raise Wisconsin's minimum wage, bumping it up to $7.25 an hour sooner rather than later. And this bill would also index the minimum wage to inflation. So it would be automatically, the minimum wage that is, automatically increased from year to year. So what do you think of this bill? We heard from a co-author of the legislation just before the break. Now we will hear from someone who opposes it, Bill Smith, Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. And he joins us by telephone. Oh, hold on a second. I have to do something to put him on here. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Why are you against this idea?
Well, it's, you know, the minimum wage it's an unnecessary, it's ineffective in general. It creates a lot of economic hardship for both employers and employees. But having said that, when you index it, it really targets the wrong people. It fails to reduce poverty. It ignores natural wage growth in our economy. And by the way, many of the people that the authors of this proposal are targeting for an increase in their wages have had significant wage growth just naturally by getting into the workforce, learning more new skills, establishing a work ethic. They have gone up the economic ladder based on their own skills and experiences in the workforce. So it's another example of government being ineffective, trying to throw more money at an issue. And it's unfortunate because the people that will be hurt are the very people that the authors of this proposal are trying to help.
Yeah, well, but the authors say, too, that the people, low-wage workers, have waited and waited and waited for minimum wage increases in the past, citing the federal minimum wage hike to be the first in a decade.
Well, that's because there hasn't been a strong case to increase the minimum wage. For example, the median wage growth for all minimum wage employees is over 10% a year, and those working full-time have a median wage increase of nearly 14% each year, nearly three times the wage growth for other employees. So the data just doesn't support an increase in the minimum wage on an annual basis. That's the reason it hasn't been increased. And I might add that in Wisconsin it was increased just less than 2 years ago to the current level of $6.50.
Mm-hmm. What about all these other states that have set their minimum wage rates to inflation or the cost of living? Washington, Oregon, Vermont, Colorado, Ohio, Arizona, Florida, Missouri, Montana, Nevada. Why shouldn't Wisconsin do the same thing?
Well, because I think in Wisconsin we're more interested in nurturing and creating an economic climate that will help sustain our economy. We have very different economies across the country. We have very different economies across the state of Wisconsin. So we want to make sure that when we have economic mandates, such as minimum wage, that these mandates don't have the opposite effect, that it actually hurts the people that they're trying to help.
Yeah, and say again why this would hurt someone to have a hike in the minimum wage?
Well, it fails to reduce poverty. Economists agree on that for the most part, that it just doesn't. In fact, it was Robert Reich, who, former Secretary of Labor under President Clinton, who said, after all, most minimum wage workers are not poor. And there are far more effective alternatives that are well targeted to that segment of our population that that needs some help. And there are many existing programs, such as the Earned Income Tax Credit and a number of other programs that help lift these people up, that actually increase their purchasing power. For example, one study I was looking at the other day was that for every 100 workers affected by a minimum wage increase, about 86 beneficiaries are either teenagers living with their parents, single adults, married adults without children, or multiple workers in a family with children. Now, when the minimum wage goes up, Joy, you know, that doesn't just happen all by itself as an isolated incident, especially for a smaller business. When the minimum wage goes up, there have to be adjustments made in the operation of that business. You simply cannot continue to pay your employees more money when the sales and the production of that business doesn't support that higher wage base. So they have to adjust, and the adjustment typically goes to reduced job opportunities. Now, that can take the form of many things. That can take the form of eliminating a position. Typically, it's a part-time job that is lost. It could take the position of reducing the hours of workers, both full-time as well as part-time. But the bottom line is that when the cost of labor is increased, employers must take some action. Now, they can increase prices, of course, but what does that do to the low-income worker? They have to pay more money to get basic goods and services out of our economy. I'm not sure that's a very desirable goal. Yeah. Of course, the state, the sales tax revenues might go up a bit, but on the whole, minimum wage is just is poor economic policy. It's a relic of the past. It might make good politics, but it makes very poor economic policy.
Let me take some calls for you. Tom in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, you're on the air.
Wonderful. I'm calling because I've got a comment about the whole concept of as well about minimum wage. In a capitalistic society, if you use the minimum wage, you're building an adversarial relationship, I've felt. The employees want to work just hard enough so they don't get fired, and the employers want to pay just enough so that they don't have workers.
Yeah, well, did you catch that, Bill Smith?
I think I caught it. Minimum wage eliminates incentive in the workforce. I think that's what the caller
said. Yeah, I think he said it also might create an adversarial relationship between the employer and the employee.
Well, you know, it can, but I think everyone, you know, understands that when, you know, government mandates this arbitrary increase, you know, you have to comply with it, so I'm not sure how much adversarial relation, you know, impact there is there. But pretty clearly, you know, and, you know, the other thing, Joy, is we move along into more of an uncertain economy. The last thing we need to have is, you know, increases in labor costs. In that kind of a context, business cycles rise and fall over time, and we have to remember that the labor market needs a certain amount of flexibility to deal with those changing demands.
Yeah, let me get another caller in. Bob in Lake Tomahawk. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a couple questions and then a comment. I'd like to ask the gentleman, does not business make money off of people spending money?
Yeah, so please, though, because we're running short on time, Bob, what's your point?
So, well, if we raise the minimum wage, people are going to have more money to spend. They spend money at these businesses, therefore the businesses will make more money because people have more money to spend at the businesses.
Well, what about that, Bill Smith?
Well, certainly there are winners and losers under minimum wage. You know, the winners will spend more money, but they're going to be spending more money because the prices are going to cost more. So they won't be really injecting any kind of new economic activity into our economy. They're simply paying the inflation prices that will occur as the inflation rate in prices that will occur as the cost of labor increases.
Yeah. Thanks to the caller. Mike in Whitehall, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I was just calling in to ask your guest apparently is intimately familiar with the legislation being proposed. I am calling to ask him this question. Within that legislation, what does the legislation spell out as to the index that is to be used to determine the amount of the increase, and how frequently is the wage to be reviewed? I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
It's a consumer price index formula that will be used, and the increases will occur by the rule that will be proposed by the Department of Workforce Development. Now, even the Consumer Price Index, there's been questions raised whether that's really the proper tool for indexing wages. It's been criticized by some economists as being overly inflated in terms of wages and how wages are adjusted based on the CPI. So, but it will be basically a formula that will come out of workforce development based on the consumer price index.
Yeah. I'm afraid we don't have time for another call, even though we have callers waiting to talk with you about this. So tomorrow, a hearing on this bill in a legislative committee. Bill Smith, are you going to be there testifying against it?
I will be there, and I will be testifying against it on behalf of small business.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you, Joy.
Bill Smith, Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. And thanks to Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine, Assembly co-author of SB 130, who spoke with us at the beginning of the half hour. And thanks to Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter, who started us off with this edition of the State Capitol Report. Thanks to Leo Duran and to Karen Prager for producing this program. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.